standing by. All lines have been placed in a listen-only mode for today's presentation. The call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now introduce your conference host, Mr. Benjamin Hayes. You may begin.
Thank you, Catherine, and thank you to everyone who has joined us for today's briefing to discuss two new recently identified variants of the virus that cause COVID-19, as well as COVID-19 vaccines. We are joined by Dr. Henry Walk, the Incident Manager for CDC's COVID-19 response, and Dr. Nancy Messonnier, the Director of CDC's National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases, and the senior federal official leading the agency's vaccine efforts. Drs. Walk and Messonnier will provide opening remarks, and we will be joined by Dr. Greg Armstrong to take your questions. This is an on-the-record briefing and not under embargo. At this time, I will turn the call over to Dr. Walk.
Thank you, Ben, and thanks to all of you for joining us today. As many of you are aware, health officials in the United Kingdom and South Africa recently reported two new variants of SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19. Both of these variants appear to infect people more easily. It is important to know that at this time, there is no evidence that either of these variants causes more severe disease or increases the risk of death. Because these variants seem to spread more easily, we need to be even more vigilant in our prevention measures to slow the spread of COVID-19. By wearing masks, staying at least 6 feet apart from people we don't live with, avoiding crowds, ventilating indoor spaces, and washing our hands often, we can help prevent further increases in infections at a time when our health system is straining in some parts of the country. I want to take a few minutes to share with you in more detail what we know and don't know about these variants. I first want to emphasize that we're early on in our efforts to learn more about these variants, and we expect our understanding will change as more information becomes available. When that happens, we will update you. What we know. The first variant was identified originally in the UK and has likely been circulating there since September of 2020, especially in London and southeast England. The second variant was first identified in South Africa and has been circulating there since October of 2020. This second variant developed independently of the first variant. Both variants have been detected in other countries. Yesterday, public health authorities in Colorado detected the variant that was first identified in the UK in a person who reported no travel history. The lack of reported travel history suggests that this variant has been transmitted from person to person in the United States. The arrival of this variant in the United States was expected, considering how widespread it is in the UK and how frequently people travel between the US and the UK. The evidence to date indicates that both newly emerging variants spread more easily and quickly than other strains. However, there is, again, no evidence that these variants cause more severe disease or increased risk of death. Because the variants spread more rapidly, they could lead to more cases and put even more strain on our heavily burdened healthcare systems. Viruses constantly change through mutation, and we expect to see new variants emerge over time. Many mutations lead to variants that don't change how the virus infects people. Sometimes, however, variants emerge that can spread more rapidly, like these. Based on our present knowledge, experts believe our current vaccines will be effective against these strains. Here's what we do not know. We don't know how widely the variant first identified in the UK has spread in the United States. And we don't know if the other variant that was first identified in South Africa is in the United States. We also still don't know how widely these two new variants have spread elsewhere around the world. We're still learning how these variants might respond to drugs and other COVID-19 treatments, including monoclonal antibodies and convalescent plasma. As CDC continues its efforts to learn about these variant strains, we urge Americans to continue to take the proven prevention steps that help us control the spread of COVID-19. These include wearing masks, staying at least 6 feet apart from others, avoiding crowds, ventilating indoor spaces, and washing our hands often. As new information becomes available, CDC will provide updates. And now I'd like to turn the call over to Dr. Messonnier to discuss developments around the COVID-19 vaccine.
Thank you, Dr. Walken. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us. I know you've heard from other parts of Operation Warp Speed. I look forward to speaking to you today about CDC's work on COVID-19 vaccine implementation. Last week, we added national distribution and administration data to the CDC COVID data tracker. And today, we're adding the equivalent data from the 64 jurisdictions where vaccines are sent for administration. Jurisdictions are under immense stress now and have been for quite some time. As the threat of COVID-19 disease and death remains a problem here in the U.S., jurisdictions are supporting the largest vaccine rollout in the country's history and trying to maintain standard public health services. Their hard work and dedication now and in the future are the reasons the COVID-19 vaccination program will be successful. And as with all the data we have for the response, including the daily cases and testing counts, CDC relies on data from states, locals, tribes, and territories to understand where we are as a nation and what support we can offer at a local level to assist communities hardest hit by the pandemic. Today, we have also added online the total distribution and administration data representing the 52 jurisdictions that have started the Pharmacy Partnership for Long-Term Care program. So far, more than 2.6 million people, including healthcare professionals and nursing home and assisted living facility residents, have received their first dose and are on their way towards protection from COVID-19. It's important to remember it's been less than a year since we found out about this virus, and just 20 days ago that the first vaccine was authorized for use. With two vaccines now available here under emergency use, I would say how far we've come is an extraordinary achievement. However, we have always expected and prepared for bumps in the road. Public health experts have extensive experience with vaccine distribution and administration and are working to quickly overcome obstacles. These vaccines have had extensive safety testing before being authorized for use. As with any medicine that is being distributed to millions of people, we expect to see some side effects. They're rare, but serious side effects can happen. There have been several people who, after receiving vaccine, have had severe allergic reactions. CDC takes these reports very seriously and has been meeting regularly with FDA, our partner in monitoring vaccine safety, to discuss. We anticipate an MMWR early next week and regular online updates about cases. CDC staff and I have spent the last few months laying the groundwork for the vaccine rollout and more recently telling people about the specific vaccines. Through conference calls with partners, clinician calls with tens of thousands of healthcare providers, and weekly and sometimes daily calls with immunization and emergency program managers. We recognize people have questions. It's our job at CDC in public health and as healthcare providers to answer those questions so that when vaccine is more broadly available, everyone is prepared to take it. It's impressive we've been able to vaccinate millions of people in the last 2 weeks, and we'll continue to support local jurisdictions to efficiently and quickly ensure vaccine gets to priority populations in their communities. It's been a difficult year for all of us, including me. It's been especially difficult to have my children homeschooling and to not be able to see my friends and family. It's been a year of unprecedented challenges. We've struggled with how to work and how our children learn, and we've all had to discover new ways to keep in touch with family and friends. My heart goes out to the families of the 334,029 people who have died from COVID-19. But the recent events have proved a reason for optimism as we head into the new year. While our public health and healthcare personnel work hard to get vaccination efforts running smoothly, every community and every person can do their part. Make a commitment to get vaccinated when it's your turn and encourage everyone you know to do the same. I'm confident that COVID-19 vaccination is the way we will help bring this pandemic to an end. However, until vaccine is widely available, I encourage you to do your part to help slowing the spread of COVID-19 by wearing a mask, socially distancing, and avoiding crowds. Images of people being vaccinated shared on news and through social media have been flooding in, and staff have been sharing stories of family and friends who have been vaccinated. I want to thank the men and women who have already rolled up their sleeves to get a vaccine, and I look forward to joining their ranks when it's my turn. Thank you, and I'm certainly ready to take some questions.
Thank you, Dr. Messonnier and Dr. Walk. Catherine, we're ready to take questions.
At this time, we're ready to begin our formal question and answer session. If you would like to ask your question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. The first question is coming from Helen Branswell of STAT. Your line is open.
Thanks very much for taking my question. I'm wondering if you could give us a sense of on what basis you feel that the variants may not erode the efficacy of the vaccines or the antibody therapies. There's a preprint in MedArchive from a group in the UK that talks about the emergence of the N501Y chained on the spike protein, and there, and this was in a patient who had received a convalescent sera or antibodies, and there they saw an actual change, an erosion, sort of a move towards escape. Have there actually been studies done? What are you basing your thoughts on?
Yeah, thanks, Helen. This is Henry. So, well, first of all, the response to a vaccine polyclonal and some of the mutations that have happened, for example, in these new variants are very point mutations. But so I'm going to actually ask Dr. Armstrong to talk a bit more about what we're seeing and how that might relate to vaccine.
Thank you.
Yeah. So this is Greg Armstrong. The from what we know from experience with this mutation and other mutations is that it's unlikely to have a large impact on vaccine-induced immunity or on existing immunity from previous strains. We do know that some of these mutations can result in reduced efficacy of monoclonal antibodies, but keep in mind that monoclonal antibodies generally target one part of the protein, one what we call epitope, whereas natural immunity, whether it's natural immunity or vaccine-induced immunity, is polyclonal. It is against several different parts of the parts of the spike protein. So the experts are generally in consensus that mutations like this are unlikely to cause a large impact on the neutralization. It may cause a small impact, but keep in mind it's likely that the amount of immunity that is induced by either natural infection or by vaccination is great enough that a slightly decreased titer may not have any noticeable effect at all. But with all this said, this again is the opinion of experts from around the world, based on experience with previous similar mutations. We haven't seen the in vitro data, which is underway currently in the UK, and so we'll definitely have a more definitive answer once that data is public.
Great, thank you, and move on to the next question.
And the next question is coming from Carla Johnson from the Associated Press. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Besides Colorado, what other states are doing genome sequencing of suspicious samples, those with the S gene target failure, or sending those samples to CDC for that sequencing?
Thank you. Dr. Armstrong?
Yeah, so we don't have a complete list. I can tell you this. We are working with a national laboratory that gets samples from around the U.S. and tests those with the Thermo Fisher TechPath assay, the one that produces this characteristic response for the UK variant. And we have asked them to target specimens that have that from around the country. And we anticipate getting some data back from that in the next couple of days. So in addition to that, those national efforts, there are lots of efforts that are going on locally that we are aware of. So the effort in Colorado, for example, in California, in Massachusetts, Delaware. But as I said, there are lots of laboratories that have this capacity around the U.S., and we've heard anecdotally and directly that a lot of them are looking for this variant right now.
Great. Thank you. And next question?
And the next question is coming from Lena Sun of The Washington Post. Your line is open.
Thank you. This question is for Dr. Meissonier. Dr. Meissonier, could you talk a little bit more about why there is such a huge gap between distribution and administration? What is happening on the ground? Is there any additional federal effort to maybe smooth that process or change the way things are being done so that more shots are getting into arms?
Sure, and thank you for that question. It's a really important point. We need to remember that these are new vaccines on new platforms with slightly complex requirements for storage, handling, and administration. And we're launching a vaccine campaign in the midst of a pandemic surge after a year that's drained and strained healthcare providers and public health departments. And we're launching a vaccine campaign during the winter holidays. So many jurisdictions planned for a more measured start to vaccination. And I'm excited that 2.5 million people have initiated vaccine and are on the way to getting protected. I really expect that those numbers are going to increase fast next week.
Next question, please.
And the next question is coming from Apoorva Mondavilli of the New York Times. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. I want to go back to the variants and ask, as an addendum to what Carla was asking, is there a plan to sequence more of these genomes in the United States so that we can spot variants a little bit faster? And also, will there be a sort of concerted plan going forward, as there is for influenza, to spot variants?
Dr. Armstrong?
Yeah, sure. The short answer is yes. We're pursuing this along several lines. Number one is a national system we're calling the National SARS-CoV-2 Strain Surveillance System that got underway in November, and we're now scaling it up to a point where we'll be receiving 750 samples per week for sequencing and for further characterization. To supplement that, we're working with at least two national reference labs and hope to be shortly working with at least one more, funding them to sequence viruses from around the U.S. So far, we have commitments for 1,750 sequences per week, and we're hoping to add another 1,000 to that. So that between these first two systems, we anticipate scaling up to 3,500 whole genome sequences per week. Now, in addition to that, since last year, we've put out contracts to seven different academic centers around the U.S. to do sequencing locally. Those are in Boston, New Haven, Atlanta, Athens, Georgia, Nashville, Madison, Wisconsin, and the Scripps Institute in San Diego. And those are working with those groups have been working since earlier this year, collaborating with public health agencies. In addition, we've over the last several years, we've been building capacity for sequencing, starting here at CDC and then and for the last few years in state and local health departments under a program called the Advanced Molecular Detection Program, or AMD, such that all state public health labs at this point have the capacity to do the sequencing. And a number of them have been have already been applying sequencing locally to better understand the epidemiology locally and to respond to the to respond to the pandemic. About 2 weeks ago, we put out funding to those state and local health departments to increase the amount of sequencing that they're doing. And then in addition to all that, since April, we've been convening a group called SPHERES. You can get information about that by searching the internet for SPHERES coronavirus. This is a consortium of over 160 groups around the U.S. that are doing sequencing. It includes public health, academia, non-governmental organizations, and industry.
Great. Thank you. Let's go to the next question.
The next question is coming from Elizabeth Weiss of USA Today. Your line is open.
Hey, thanks so much for taking my question. I wanted to ask about the long-term care facility vaccination program, and I'm trying to get clarity around the amount of vaccine that has to be held back for that and whether or not that might be impacting the differential between vaccine shipped and vaccine actually administered.
Okay. Dr. Messonnier?
Yes, thanks for that question. I think it is impacting the differential, especially this week. So I think you can imagine that before pharmacies start scheduling out vaccination clinics, they wanted to be sure that there was enough vaccine available so that when they entered the facility, they had enough for everybody in the facility that wanted the vaccine. So the process does involve making sure that that vaccine is available before launching the long-term care facility program in that jurisdiction. And especially this week, that perhaps accounts for some of those discrepancies. That long-term care facility program will really start escalating in the number of clinics that it's conducting this week and into next week. And that's part of the reason that I'm so confident we're going to start seeing the number of people who are receiving vaccine to start going up so quickly next week. Thank you.
Next question, please.
The next question is coming from Peter Loftus from the Wall Street Journal. Your line is open.
Hello. Yesterday, Moderna said that they were offering their vaccine to their employees, contractors, and members of the board of directors. And I'm wondering what CDC thinks about that in light of the prioritization plan that's been approved by ACIP. And is this something that is this the kind of thing that the CDC needs to approve or authorize, or is that not really in your purview?
Henry?
Yeah, I think that,
Dr. Messonnier. So ACIP makes recommendations, but especially around prioritization, we understand that there will be a level of local adaptation, and frankly, that's expected. So the question of Moderna is really something that Moderna needs to be discussing with their jurisdiction. What I can say, perhaps for me, is that I haven't been vaccinated yet. I'm ready. As soon as it's my turn, I will rapidly roll up my sleeve and accept the shot. But I haven't been vaccinated because those initial vaccines are going to the people on the front line, those hero healthcare workers that have been dealing with patients since the beginning, and folks in long-term care facilities who are really high risk. So I'm waiting my turn, and I know that for lots of people in the United States, they're going to have to be a little patient and wait until it's their turn. I hope that they will come soon, and when it does, I certainly will be ready for it.
Next question, please.
The next question is coming from Drew Armstrong of the Bloomberg News. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. I'm wondering about the jurisdiction-level data you intend to update shortly. Can you talk about how frequently we will see those updates exactly what data categories that will include and if you anticipate adding additional granularity later, and how should we initially understand any data lag associated with that, if you can characterize number of days and how that might change over time as your reporting systems get closer to real time.
Sure, I'm happy to talk about that. It's actually one of the really exciting things about this is that we've actually managed to really get end-to-end data flow from the patient through this the system to a data lake where we can access it and where the jurisdictions have full access to their data for decision-making. The data that's coming to CDC does allow us visibility on overall what's going on with the program. So now we're planning to update those numbers 3 times a week, but you know, we're thinking in January that we may be going to a daily update. In terms of the lag time, the agreements that providers sign before they accept a vaccine give them up to 72 hours to get their data in the system. And that's partly with the understanding that when they're so rapidly working to vaccinate people, it may take them a little time to be able to enter all the data. But what we're actually seeing so far is that it's less than that. The average was somewhere closer to 50 hours, and I certainly anticipate that once the system starts running smoothly, that data will be much more seamless. So, you know, when you look at it, I mean, right now I would think about it as being a day or two behind, but expect that we are working to really improve those timelines. And in terms of what kind of data you'll see summary data for now, but we're actively looking at the data to make sure that we understand which variables are complete. And we're working with the jurisdictions to see, frankly, the most important thing, which is the data that they need to make program decisions, but we'll also be working to increase the visibility of the data out towards the public.
Great. Thank you. Next question?
The next question is coming from Max Baer of CBS News National. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for hosting this briefing. Dr. Meslanier, on December 1st, you had anticipated that most jurisdictions would be able to vaccinate all of their health care workers within 3 weeks of the first shipment. What assumptions were made then that didn't end up panning out given the data that we're seeing now about administration of the vaccine?
When we asked jurisdictions around the launch of the program, how long it would take, they expected to vaccinate their staff. With the data that they had available at the time, most jurisdictions said that they expected it to take 3 to 4 weeks. And those were their projections. I think many of them, frankly, did not expect to have to be launching the vaccine Christmas week. And I do think that that has impacted a little bit of the rollout of the campaign. And there were certainly some changes in terms of how many doses were available that led to some last-minute changes at the jurisdictional level in terms of how they were planning out their campaigns. It's been a really short period of time. And, again, these vaccines are somewhat complicated, and there certainly is a reason, you know, the vaccines are precious and jurisdictions are appropriately being careful with them. And, frankly, they also want to make sure that they're doing the heavy lift to educate anybody who's accepting the vaccine. And so I think it's taking a little bit of time, but again, I really do rapidly expect next week when the holidays are over for those numbers to rapidly jump as jurisdictions move ahead quickly to protect their healthcare personnel and also their long-term care facility residents.
Next question, please.
The next question is coming from Eliana Block, WUSA 9. Your line is open.
Hi there. I have a quick question for you, and thank you so much for hosting this again. To date, how many variants of SARS-CoV-2 have been discovered during the pandemic worldwide?
Thank you. Dr. Armstrong?
Yeah, that's really an impossible question to answer, because it depends on how you define a variant. And what defines the variant B117, the one that emerged in the UK, is a set of mutations, a specific set of mutations that are found in all the viruses that are part of this variant. It's believed that these are all descendants of a single virus that came into being back in mid-September. But you know, there are again, it depends on if you can think of a tree and think of a tree as having branches. How do you define a branch? You know, is it the twigs that are at the end of the tree, or is it the larger branches towards the center of the tree? Depending on how you define that and where you make that cutoff, we'll determine how many variants there are.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Armstrong. Let's move on to the next question.
The next question is coming from Nathan Waxwell of The Hill. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. I'm wondering if the CDC can say if you know when this money that was allocated in the most recent stimulus bill to states for vaccine distribution might start going out?
Yeah, thanks for that question. You know, there's actually congressional language that speaks to this. We're reviewing the funds right now and the suggested activities from Congress, and we're going to move those funds out to the states where they're needed as soon as possible. Next
question. We have time for one more question, please.
And it looks like the last question is coming from Sarah Miller of NBC News. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to know if there's any indication that a more contagious variant like this, if the current mitigation methods that we use, you know, masks and social distancing, would be less effective.
Hi, this is Henry. I'll take them. We have no evidence that our mitigation measures it's in our guidance now, which is, you know, washing your hands, maintaining distance, wearing a mask, and avoiding large gatherings. We have no evidence we have no evidence that it won't work and with these various variants. So we're pushing our same messages that we've been pushing all along. And even though we do think that this variant that originated in the UK, that we found in the UK, basically potentially may transmit more than the wild type, we firmly believe that our mitigation measures that in our guidance now will work.
Thank you, Dr. Walk, Dr. Messonnier, and Dr. Armstrong, and thank you all for joining us today. This will conclude our briefing. If you have further questions, please feel free to call the main media line at 404-639-3286, or you can email media@cdc.gov. Thank you.